Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
Welcome, everybody, to Redacted on this Wednesday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And on this show, we cover the stories the mainstream media largely ignores. So welcome, welcome, welcome. We are independent media. Thank you guys for making time for us in your day, taking time to be informed about some of the stories that that don't get a lot of coverage or are fairly hidden from the rest of us in the world, including the January 6th story, perhaps no bigger story right now than what was kept from you, over 44,000 hours of video footage that was kept from you. And yeah, we've gotten our first sort of drops from Tucker Carlson over the past few days, but we are getting a lot more information now about federal involvement and exactly what the Department of Justice is now saying to all of you who might have been affected by this. Like, hey, you know all that footage that's out there? Sorry, it's going to be unavailable to you in the ways that you want for your defense in court. So
don't even think about it.
So we'll look at that.
We're also going to look at the COVID lab leak, not the one out of China. Another continent also had a lab leak. And can you guess which one? When we get to that story, because this is a story that I had to dig for today about a lab leak out of a place you may know and like. And so I want to know, like, how many people know about this? How much has it been suppressed? I want to have a conversation with you.
We will do that. We're also going to look at the mysterious deaths of Clinton associates as it relates to Jeffrey Epstein, Bill Clinton, and yet another Bill Clinton associate has died mysteriously. Whitney Webb, investigative journalist, is going to be joining us to dive into that tonight on the show, because this one, I mean, they've all been weird, but the one that just happened is perhaps the weirdest. So we will talk about that and more as Redacted starts right now. Someone in the chat on Rumble says, ooh, Whitney Webb. Yes, that woman is a genius.
Is she your sister? Someone on Rumble saying she's your sister. Or is it me that they usually think I'm your sister?
No, they think you're my sister. You're not my sister. You're my cousin, not my wife. This is my wife.
I'm the old ball and chain.
This is my wife, Natalie. Philip is running the show. He's in the control booth today. And we had to reconnect and do some reboots and all this kind of crazy stuff because we had, there's a crazy wind storm here right now. So bear with us if anything happens here. We don't know what's going on. But if there's any kind of buffering, it's probably on your end. No, just cheat. I don't know what's going on. Anyway.
Hit the like button anyway.
Yeah, hit the like button. And I should mention, you know, I just looked at the analytics today. 70% of you are subscribed to the channel. That means about 30% of you are not subscribed, but you watch us. It says you watch us every night, but you're not subscribed. So all you got to do is hit that subscribe button and then turn on that little bell notification and you'll receive notifications when we go live and all of that. So just please subscribe. It really helps us out here. Also what helps us out is we have a daily newsletter. It's totally free. We don't charge for it. And the reason we started this was so that we could stay connected with you, because big tech controls everything. And that way we have our own email that we can send to you. And every day we send you a great newsletter. But in the case that, hey, something happens to us on YouTube, they block us, ban us, we have a way to stay connected with you. And again, it's totally free. And you get a great newsletter every morning over your cup of coffee. Just go to redacted.inc, put in your email address, you'll receive a welcome email, and then you'll receive that newsletter first thing tomorrow morning at about 7 a.m. Eastern time is when you should see that newsletter in your inbox.
Yes, indeed.
All right. Should we get to our top story? Let's talk about this.
I'm ready.
All right. Let's talk about it. So Tucker Carlson has been dropping a number of bombs, and the deep state is not happy about it. They've been really coming out, trying to take him down, discredit Tucker over the past 48 hours. That's what they do when they don't like something. But anyway, stay focused on the actual story, which is what you weren't allowed to see on January 6th, right? The 44,000 hours of footage that you were not allowed to see. And Tucker Carlson has been dropping the beginnings of what we're about to see in the January 6th videotapes. But it turns out federal involvement, that's what we're really interested in. And those pieces are starting to come to light. We all know the Ray Epps story, right? Ray Epps, of course, a Fed, who ended up being on the FBI's most wanted list for one day. And then he was pulled off of this, right? And why was he pulled off? And as... you know, it's interesting because the story goes, and I forget what's his name on Timcast, who was just there. He had a great comment on this, and I'm drawing a blank off the top of my head. But he said the only reason you get taken off of a most wanted list is you die, You die, you're not on the most wanted list anymore, or you are caught, arrested.
Okay.
Right? Or convicted.
Took you a while to get around on that one.
I know, I'm trying to remember his name, and I felt bad. I couldn't think of it off the top of my head.
Like,
Say it.
Oh my God, say it.
So anyway, okay. We all can't be perfect. So anyway, so he...
That's going to come back around to me.
Yeah, oh yeah, just get ready. Karma. Karma's a funny way of biting you in the ass real fast.
Bad thing.
So yeah, you know, you get... If you're taken off this list, there's a reason for it, right? Immediately, right? You're a Fed. You're a part of the system. So now we're starting to see pieces of video coming forward of other, perhaps, federal... you know, agitators, we don't know exactly, whispering people to other members of the police force, people wearing headsets. Like, who wears a headset and just walks around Capitol grounds and then whispers things to police officers, and then police officers start waving people into buildings, right? It's very odd, like, all of this that's going on. But because of all of these new tapes, these 44,000 hours of tapes, there are people behind bars, many of whom are poor. They don't have money. They don't have high-powered lawyers to take care of and go through 44,000 hours of footage. So the argument now is, let these people out. So Donald Trump, former president of the United States, went on Truth Social saying, let the January 6th prisoners go. They were convicted or awaiting trial based on a giant lie, a radical left con job. Thank you, Tucker Carlson and Speaker of the House Kevin McCarthy, for what you both have done. New video footage is irrefutable.
Okay. I mean, that's definitely going to endear him to his base, clearly. And, you know, the January 6th committee had recommended criminal charges for Trump based on the video edit that they put together. And so, you know, he maybe is like, can I see some of that? Because I'll put together my own video footage. You know, it would be interesting to now go through this trial by trial and see which of these people were convicted for just being in proximity, like the gentleman that we talk to here often, and which were actually like breaking windows or what have you.
Exactly. And so thank you in the chat for pointing this out. Someone just said it was Chase Patel. Thank you, Neil Friedman. It was Chase Patel. That's right. And Old Man Strength says Ray Epps equals two reasons where you either died or caught or are a confidential informant and working as a Fed with the Feds. So they put you on the list and they take you off. You're a confidential informant or you're dead. So those are the two reasons. So now, in these 44,000 hours, what are we going to learn? Well, it turns out we're going to be learning a lot. And this is exactly why they're scared about this. So here is Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, furious, throwing a temper tantrum on the floor of the Senate about the release of this footage. Watch.
I, so many others who were here in the Capitol, and millions of Americans are just furious with Tucker Carlson and Kevin McCarthy today. and he's going to come back tonight with another segment. Fox News should tell him not to. Fox News, Rupert Murdoch, tell Carlson not to run a second segment of lies. You know it's a lie. You've admitted it's a lie. And Speaker McCarthy is every bit as culpable as Mr. Carlson. Speaker McCarthy's decision to share security footage with Fox looked like a mistake from the very beginning. But after last night, it looks like a disaster. Speaker McCarthy has played a treacherous game by catering to the hard right. He's enabled the big lie and has further eroded away at our precious democracy. Last night, millions of Americans tuned in to one of the most shameful hours we have ever seen on cable television. With contempt for the facts, disregard of the risks, and knowing full well he was lying to his audience, Fox News host Tucker Carlson ran a lengthy segment last night arguing the January 6th Capitol attack was not a violent insurrection. By diving deep into the waters of conspiracy and cherry-picking from thousands of hours of security footage, Mr. Carlson told the bold-faced lie that the Capitol attack, which we all saw with our own eyes, was somehow not an attack at all. He tried to argue it was nothing more than a peaceful sightseeing tour. Can you imagine? I urge Fox News to order Carlson to cease propagating the big lie on his network and to level with their viewers about the truth behind the efforts to mislead the public. Conduct like theirs is just asking for another January 6th.
Saxon Steele in our Rumble chat says the cabal is falling apart. You know, it's amazing during the January 6th hearings why we didn't get to hear from certain witnesses who were there, who are on these videotapes, who would have refuted a lot of what we saw, or other angles, other pieces of video that would have shown an entirely different story at the January 6th hearings. Why was that withheld? It sounds like Chuck Schumer, you guys were cherry picking video, right?
And so he's saying they're going to inspire them to do this again by telling people they were nice.
Right.
That they might be nice again.
Right. Those people are going to attack because
you're telling them they're nice, and then they might do it again.
So it's better than to paint all of them as violent insurrectionists, is Chuck Schumer's plan?
Yes.
So alienate thousands of people who came to the Capitol to hear speeches, and okay, so just continue to alienate. That's good.
And, you know, again, this is very confusing, and we should all feel not committed to any narrative about what January 6th was. We should all feel like we want to just see everything and let the narrative come later. But the way the media and politicians now are playing this out is the narrative's in place. You can't see anything against the narrative. And no seeker of truth should be that way. We should not feel like we know everything until we feel like we have all of the information. And I may never get there because I am certainly not going to watch 44,000 hours. How many days would that take? Have we done that?
So I've done the math, yeah. And so the math on that is 40,000. So 40,000 hours. Forget the other 4,000 hours. But let's just say 40,000 hours, right, is... If you worked an 8-hour day to watch all of that, an 8-hour day,
right,
and not even taking a lunch break,
right,
that would be 5,000 days,
okay,
which is 13 years with no weekends off. Like, you would literally just be watching January 6th footage for the next 13 years of your life. Do you want to do that?
I'm going to tell you right now, that's not my future self plan, but they can hire interns.
Yeah, they can hire a lot of interns. So Twitter was being used, of course, as a tool to censor people on January 6th. It was also used as a mob mentality tool. Like, hey, was anyone at January 6th? Send us a photo and tag the FBI, right? That was how it was being used. And, of course, this was pre-Elon Musk. Here's what Greg Price said on Twitter. The January 6th committee lied about how Brian Sicknick died, lied about Barry Loudermilk taking rioters on a reconnaissance mission, lied about Josh Hawley running away, lied about Ray Epps being a credible witness. right? We now know from this footage. But, and then Elon Musk chimes in. Besides misleading the public, they withheld evidence for partisan political reasons that sent people to prison for more serious crimes than they committed. That is deeply wrong, legally and morally. And because they didn't allow them to have access to this footage, many of these people are sitting there in solitary confinement right now. So we had a chance to talk with, Brandon Straka. He was there on January 6th. He was there to give a speech. He was invited for a speaking engagement. And when he came out of the subway, he started filming what was going on. And he was then had his life turned upside down. He's been a guest on the show before. The FBI raided his home a few weeks ago and threw him in prison for being on the Capitol grounds that day. So I wanted to get his take on exactly what this video portends and his thoughts on the people that are currently behind bars. Brandon, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So just your response, we see the 40,000 hours is now roughly the amount of footage that we're going to see and dive through over the next couple of weeks here, thanks to Tucker getting his hands on this. When you and I last spoke here on the show, we thought it was maybe 16,000 hours of footage, which sounded monumental at best. What's your thought just starting to see some of these initial reports, the QAnon shaman piece coming out, Jacob Chansley, and those types of pieces, and now starting to see more evidence how involved the feds were on that day?
I mean, for me personally, none of it surprises me. I guess I can say that I'm really happy that we're finally getting to a point where the public at large is getting a little more access to information that many of us who have gone through this behind the scenes already instinctively knew in our guts. I mean, when you're a person who's dealing directly with the FBI and dealing directly with the DOJ, and you're seeing the ways in which they're contorting and manipulating and, you know, sort of manufacturing information about a narrative that they're trying to create because they're doing it to you. I mean, they're doing it directly to me. They're doing it to other people that I know who have gone through this. And because I think of the toxicity and the radioactivity of January 6th, it was very, very difficult, even for someone like me who has a lot of media contacts and who's, you know, not terribly controversial and pretty well liked for the most part. It was difficult for me to be able to find platforms to get my story out, to get my voice out, to talk about this. So I'm really happy that the public is now starting to see the counter narrative. And, you know, and the other point that I guess I'd like to make about this, too, is that a lot of people on the left are kind of having their meltdown moment. And I'm seeing a lot of comments on Twitter about, you know, we're being gaslighted and we all saw this. We know what happened. Look, nobody's taking that away from you. OK, I think that a lot of people are having this panic reaction, like they're going to have their victimhood taken away from them. Like, you can continue to be a victim of the narrative of January 6th into perpetuity. It like no one's taking that away. But what we're saying to you is that there are a great number of people who did not smash windows, who did not get into a fight with a police officer and did not go to Washington, D.C. on January 6th with the intention of causing any harm or violence or overthrowing the government, and ended up at the wrong place at the wrong time, many of them probably without the knowledge that they were even in the wrong place at the wrong time, and they're being treated like domestic terrorists.
Well, we saw one judge already acquit an individual who was there on that day and who now, because of video footage, showed police officers waving him in, among other people, not just him, and that led to his acquittal. So imagine what other video footage could do to help the people that have been locked up. And I just want to bring out, because you pointed out the DOJ part of this, so we have the Department of Justice now, according to Politico, noting that it has built tools intended to help defendants and their lawyers pinpoint relevant footage by camera angle and time of day. So what they're saying now is that the Justice Department says that we're not going, if anyone's awaiting trial right now, we're not going to delay your proceedings because of the newly released Fox News footage. Like, sorry, we've released our own tools that will allow you to pinpoint relevant footage by camera angle and time of day. You have to use our tools in order to prove your innocence. What? Right. Is this like North Korea?
Well, and also, I mean, we're talking about, now we know 40, 50, 60,000 some hours of footage. And many of these people are sitting in solitary confinement in a prison. So, I mean, I don't really understand how they're supposed to look at this footage. And also, a lot of these people are very low income, poor people, and who are sitting in this jail. They have public defenders. There's no way. And if they could possibly hire a private lawyer, imagine the amount of hours they would be racking up, spending for a legal team to have to go through all this footage to have to try to find exonerating evidence for these people. And the public defenders are not going to do it, largely because why would they? But second of all, a lot of the public defenders hate their clients. I mean, these are very liberal leftist Washington, D.C. public defenders who are doing the bare minimum, who hate their clients and believe their clients are insurrectionists. I don't see these people scouring through tens and thousands of hours of footage trying to find evidence that would exonerate their clients. But I can tell you that in my case, I was never given access to this footage. And in fact, if you'll recall, in my case, I was initially charged with two felonies and a misdemeanor, with the threat of a third felony hanging over my head of the obstruction of Congress felony. And after my case was continued five times over the course of a year and dragged out, finally, in the end, what the prosecution presented us with for evidence was my own video. The only evidence that the prosecution had against me was the video that I myself shot. So, and by the way, everyone around me was filming a video. And I find it very hard to believe that there's not security footage from the Capitol facing out from the east side. Now, in my case, I was accused of words. Every crime that I was accused of was a word crime. So I was never accused of, you know, violence, vandalism, theft, or destruction, anything like that. I was accused of the two biggest accusations against me. The worst things that I was accused of doing by the federal government were saying the words, go, go, those were literally those two, go, go, and the words, take it, take it. They alleged that I said the words, go, go, to encourage the crowd to enter the Capitol. Now, remember, I was 35 feet away from the Capitol with hundreds of people between me and the open doors of the Capitol. But they alleged that me saying the words, go, go, was encouraging the mob to go inside. And I don't know, perhaps the theory is that January 6th wouldn't have happened had I not said the words, go, go. And also, I was accused of saying the words, take it, take it, while somebody else took a shield from an officer 35 feet away from me. And just for the record, the person also gave the shield back to the officer 6 seconds later. But those were the two like smoking gun pieces of evidence against me. Now, remember, I'm filming the video. And and that's the only piece of evidence in my case. So there is no footage at this point that shows who is saying the words. But that footage exists. It's somewhere. Somebody has video of whose mouths were moving when I allegedly said those things. And I've never been given access to any of this footage.
Is that amazing to think? Thank you, Brandon. Like that as a defense.
Yeah.
Okay, you guys have 44,000 hours, right? The DOJ has gone through with timestamps and all. We'd like to be able to see that for our client to be able to defend him or herself.
Right. Show me the ones that were geolocated.
Right.
In my proximity.
Cell phone data. Show me exactly where he was. Was he inciting violence? Was no. Okay, then, you know, sorry. You're exactly what President Trump was saying. We're done. We're done here. Let these people go. Let us know in the chat. What do you think? Should these people be let out? The people who are not, you know, first of all, don't have money, aren't able to defend themselves. They're not being given access to the 44,000 hours worth of footage that they don't want them to see that could, in fact, prove their own innocence.
Well, especially anyone who they just think were there, just showed up, right?
And
because now there's nuance. So, you know, if you have footage of someone breaking a window or something like that, sure, then let's give them their day in court. But just, you know, trial by association is certainly not appropriate based on, you know, what we're continuing to see.
Overwhelming answers are yes, yes, get them out of there. Get them out of there in solitary confinement in a very hostile Washington, D.C. You know, that's like being trapped in the enemy's camp, right?
Yeah.
Awful. We've got more news to get to here on this Tuesday. We're going to look at this COVID story and the lab leak story, but it's not the one that you've heard. This one is amazing, and it didn't come out of China. We'll tell you where it happened, and no one, and it was totally suppressed, by the way. This story is going to blow your mind. Wait till you hear about that. And then Bill Clinton, he has a lot of friends that are mysteriously dying suddenly and oddly. We just had a new one that just died this weekend, a young woman, and her family was with her. And this, the web, the ties that are all connected here with Jeffrey Epstein and the deep state are pretty remarkable. We'll get to that in a second. But first, I don't know if you've been looking around. With the Federal Reserve coming out saying, well, yep, interest rates again, rising interest rates, because we printed too much money. The value of the U.S. dollar continuing to decline because we just keep printing money and propping up these hooligans on Wall Street. And so our friends at Lear Capital can actually get you set up with gold and silver inside of an IRA, inside of a gold and silver IRA. And the way that this works is maybe you have an old, like when I left my job years ago, I had a 401k that was sitting there. When I left a job previous to that years ago, I had an old IRA that was sitting there with like $21,000 in it. And it sat there for years, not doing anything in the stock market. And then I converted it to a self-directed account, which let me do whatever I wanted with it. I could invest in gold. I could buy stocks if I wanted to. I could invest in real estate. But the beauty of this is that Lear will set this up for you. So you have total checkbook control of a self-directed account where you can buy gold and silver, precious metals inside of your retirement account. Right now, Lear is doing something special. If you buy 1 ounce of gold, they'll give you an ounce of free silver also, which is pretty awesome. That's free money. So even if you do nothing else with it, you're sitting on free silver, which continues to go up in value. So again, try it, right? Just give them a shot and give them a phone call because they'll give you a free gold kit and just give them a phone call because they'll talk you through the process. So their phone number is 1-800-613-3557. Give them a call and they'll walk you through the process and you can get a free silver and gold investor guide shipped right to your house. Or you can visit their website, LearRedacted.com. Get your free gold and silver investor guide and receive that thing right in your mailbox, and you can decide for yourself if you want to get started investing today. Again, 1-800-613-3557.
All right, we just had two new rebels. No, three. Jerry McGee, and then the previous two rhymed, Scotty Day and Jerry J, or what have you. So
what this means is when you...
Yeah, I was...
Oh, you're going to tell
you me? Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so what this means is this is new subscribers. If you're a new rebel, Nunya just became a new rebel. Welcome to the rebellion.
I think it's Nunya.
Nunya?
Like Nunya Business.
Yes, Nunya.
No, Nunya? Nunya Business?
Is that you, Philip?
No, it's not me. I am not Nunya.
Okay. And Nunya. This one, I don't know if I can say that. Krillikarvav. Sorry about that. Okay. So I would like to know... And as I present this, I'm not going to be able to watch the chat, so you watch the chat.
Can I just I'm watching the chat right now. North Carlos was like, says, no, Clayton, I trust fiat currency. I trust the full faith and credit of the United States government. That's pretty good.
It's got to be a joke, right?
Yeah, it is a joke. All right, go ahead.
Okay. I would like to know how many of you are familiar with the theory that is being called a conspiracy theorist of Fort Detrick. Do you know this story or do you not?
Fort Detrick.
So can you just, in the chat, say yes or no to this? Because as I started to dig into this COVID lab leak story today, I started to see things that I had not seen before. This was news to me. And when you dig, you will get to a point where you find media narratives telling you that this is a QAnon conspiracy. Okay. So I kept digging with that caveat in mind, and I just want to know how many of you know about this, because I'm going to present what I have found and how I came across this, and then you decide if it's a conspiracy theory or not. You decide.
Almost overwhelmingly in our chat, most people say no, they have not heard of this. There's a few yeses in there.
Okay. All right. So Fort Detrick is in the United States. We're going to talk about a lab leak outside of the United States in 2019. Does that pique your interest? Because all of these COVID stories now, COVID came from a lab based on new reporting. Never says where. Doesn't say what lab. Just says from a lab. And then the rest of us sort of assume China because that's what our politicians and media say, right? As the U.S. continues to use this lab leak theory to ramp up anti-China rhetoric, China hit back this week saying, you should look into your own labs. Now, recall that the Department of Energy recently came out with this report saying that they think that COVID could have come from a laboratory leak, and they said so with low confidence. Here was the breaking story at the end of February, I believe it was. Yeah. Here is the low confidence bit, that the Energy Department made its judgment with low confidence, according to people who have read the report. The FBI previously came to the conclusion that the pandemic was likely the result of a lab leak in 2021 with moderate confidence. Okay. Again, nowhere in the story does it say where that lab leak may have been. So, you know, we all automatically just jump to China, right?
Right. It's Wuhan. Yeah, right.
So, but China now says that the U.S. has not been cooperative with investigations on the origins of COVID, even with the World Health Organization, which doesn't seem that interested. Now, this is the foreign ministry spokesperson, Mao Ning. She accused the U.S. of political manipulation regarding the origins of COVID, and she pushed back on the World Health Organization's statement that China has not cooperated with COVID investigations. Instead, she said they have actually shared more data and research findings than any other country and contributed the most on origins tracing. So here's the statement that sent me on this down this rabbit hole today. She says, the U.S., however, ignored these science-based conclusions and recommendations and kept pressuring the WHO into repeatedly demanding origins tracing in China. It's quite clear what the U.S. is trying to achieve. While claiming to take origins tracing seriously, the U.S. never invited WHO experts groups into the U.S. for a joint study or shared any early data. Instead, it has turned a blind eye to the world's concerns about U.S. biomilitary bases at Fort Detrick and around the world. And so, you know, I was like, oh, what's that about Fort Detrick? I hadn't heard of this lab before. I've heard of COVID labs in the U.S. and North Carolina. Those were mentioned in the Fauci hearings. We reported on COVID projects in Boston, where those were dated February 2020. So we know they were working on COVID, at least in Boston, before we all went into lockdown. But what is Fort Detrick? Well, I went digging. Here is sort of a comical tweet that was surfaced to me from our friend of the show, Garland Nixon. He says, you know, breaking news, now CDC insiders consider that the agency is about to release a document saying that theory that COVID came from a Chinese lab is now perfectly acceptable, whereas once we weren't allowed to say that. However, any assertions that contain the word Fort Detrick will be considered QAnon conspiracy insanity. Okay, so we've all been warned. If you go down this rabbit hole, you're going to be called names. We're going to go together. Let's go. So there are biolabs in Maryland, and they have been subject to, or the question, are there biolabs in Maryland and have they been subjected to COVID origin investigations? Those are the questions we should be asking. So there are, in fact, biolabs in Maryland, and it turns out that the Fort Detrick lab did have a lab leak in August of 2019. Here's the New York Times headline over it. This is an NIH lab, meaning a Fauci lab. Go ahead.
I was going to read it because people who listen to the show won't be able to read it. Deadly germ research is shut down at Army Lab over safety concerns, says the New York Times.
Dated August 5th, 2019. This is Fort Detrick that was closed down after investigations in June and July and then remained closed over a very mysterious period of time. Now, this lab, the history of this lab began in the 1950s as Camp Detrick. Wikipedia says that it was designated a permanent installation for peacetime biological research and development shortly after World War II, which I had to lol at. Peacetime biological research, huh? Mm-hmm. It did, in fact, make biological weapons until President Nixon ended that program and kicked that on over to the Department of Health and Human Services in the 1970s. So I guess biological weapons are considered health and human services.
Oh, of course.
Okay. The website today has this COVID lab for Fort Detrick. It opened as a COVID lab in April of 2020. Before that, it had been closed for 8 months in the summer of 2019 after the CDC investigated it. Now, here was the at the time, military.com reported on this because it's a military biolab. This article since has been taken down. It only exists on web archive sites. So you see here that there were, in fact, breaches at this lab in the midsummer of 2019. Here is the summary from this article. The two breaches reported by these two agencies demonstrated a failure of the Army laboratory to implement and maintain containment procedures sufficient to contain select agents or toxins that were made by operations in biosafety level 3 and 4 laboratories, according to the report. Biosafety level 3 and 4 are the highest levels of containment requiring special protective equipment, airflow, and standard operating procedures. Due to the redactions of the report, due to redactions to protect against notification of the release of an agent under federal select agent program, it's unclear the result of the two breaches. So they don't exactly know what came out of it. And then this Colonel Darren Cox says, well, breach is a loaded word. You can say, he's like, while there was a breach, there was no exposure. He said no one was exposed to any agents or toxins. Just, you know, I don't know. How does that land on you, Philip, as someone who's worked in labs?
So, yeah, I'm trying to parse this out. So if they're in a, well, since it's a virus, it's probably a VSL 3 or 4 lab. So that's virus security level or safety level. But so if there was a breach, but no one was exposed, a breach in a level 3 or 4 lab, a level 4 lab is required to be located in the middle of a level 3 lab. And it's all under negative pressure. So if there's a breach in it, everything gets sucked in, not out. So if it made it out of the level 4 into the level 3, and then there's some kind of breach from the level 3, that doesn't happen. That would, to me, would imply, I mean, I could be wrong. I'm not, you know, working there. But to me, that sounds an awful lot like someone was exposed, because that's kind of how it
yeah.
Willis Addison worked there. He's one of our chat. He's one of our viewers. Willis, nice to see you tonight. Thank you for watching. Willis, thank you for his super chat. He said, Fort Detrick is a level 4 military lab. I worked there.
Okay.
There you go.
And so the rest of this article goes on to say, like, well, we think someone put their foot in a door to stop it from closing while they were going in and out to, like, let in a friend. That kind of, that's how it reads. And I'm like, they should have known better. So we closed the lab down for 8 months. It's very hard to buy that. I'm going to send you the full article and, or, you know, I'll put it in the chat and you decide how you feel about that. But it does feel very much like, no, come on. But just before this breach, researchers from this lab were working on research about coronavirus. Look at this paper published March of 2019. I made a little video here so that I could hover over the authors' names so that you know that they are, in fact, Fort Detrick researchers. So we know now here's a graphic from that paper predicting that these viruses, including coronaviruses, this is how they could spill over to humans. And here are the people who would be high risk. This is 1 year before the pandemic. The paper doesn't necessarily say they were experimenting with COVID, but they were studying it. So, you know, I can't say whether or not they had actual samples, but we do know that they were studying it. And we do know that there was a lab leak in the summer of 2019 that caused the lab to be shut down. The same summer, during the lab closure, there was an outbreak of a respiratory virus in Virginia about 60 miles away. Now, we can't say they're related, but we are saying someone should look into it. And the doctor who ABC interviewed said, yeah, this is unusual. It's summertime. Listen.
Tonight, a deadly outbreak in Virginia. Two deaths and dozens of residents sickened by a respiratory illness here at the Green Spring Retirement Community.
For a respiratory outbreak to occur in July would certainly not be as likely as for it to occur during the winter.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
Why do we have a respiratory outbreak in July? That's strange.
Others are saying, you know, this thing was a... Someone in the chat was saying this place was an anthrax lab for 40 years. It's been sealed up for 40 years. So who knows what other nefarious things they've been working on there.
Okay. So did this mysterious outbreak at the nursing home just end? or did it quietly spread throughout the U.S.? Was it COVID-related or another respiratory virus that also rages through the summer? Could have been coincidental. Or perhaps there were case numbers suppressed in the U.S. before the pandemic really got started, as early as 2019 or 2020, even first day of 2020. In fact, USA Today and the Palm Beach Post found that in Florida, the state had removed records from its website showing that they had as many as 171 COVID cases on January 1st, 2020. They had positive cases on January the 1st, 2020, which means those people had COVID in 2019. They didn't announce any COVID cases until March 2nd. Here is that story from the Palm Beach Post, which the USA Today also ran, saying, we know that COVID was here before they told us. Look at this last sentence. The state pulled the records off its website late Monday without explanation. So, an infectious disease lab was conveniently closed while COVID was just starting to break out for unrelated reasons. And then 8 months later, hey, everyone, we reopened and now we can work on that COVID thing that has come about since we've been closed. Here's the article about when they opened back up, saying, you know, lawmakers applaud the decision to reopen Fort Detrick. So if this is all feeling conspiracy theory to you, I admit we're, you know, it feels all too coincidental, because while COVID had, there was a lab leak in a lab that studied COVID, and then COVID, and then there were respiratory virus outbreaks, and then COVID was here before we knew it. And so what? I mean, this smells, right?
Yeah, it smells a lot. And as one of our YouTuber says, or one of our chat, Joel says, Nathan Rich did a whole breakdown of this. I'd forgotten about this. The Hot Pot King, he did a whole like timeline of Fort Detrick and wondering, you know, where did COVID-19 actually come from? So the narrative that we've been spun about this, this idea that it came from China, that it came from that spot. Well, interesting. And we also know that, of course, at Boston University, they were doing gain-of-function research prior to this COVID outbreak.
Right. So here are all the things that, like, play into this conspiracy that we know for sure. I just made notes because I'm like, this is too crazy. We do know that Fort Detrick researchers were studying COVID in early 2019. We do know they had a lab closure due to a breach in the summer of 2019 and didn't open again until April of 2020. We do know there were respiratory outbreaks in that region at the same time. And we do know that COVID was in the U.S. long before March of 2020. And we know that the U.S. has not participated in origin tracing in the U.S. in any U.S. biolabs. And for some reason, the World Health Organization doesn't seem all that interested in doing so. Now, the Washington Post says that the fact that we're even talking about Fort Detrick again, they're sort of saying like, oh, it revives the claim. Here's the Washington Post today that COVID, China angrily reacts to raise COVID. That's Christopher Wray, the head of the FBI, COVID lab leak comments, reviving Fort Detrick claim. Like, oh, not that old thing again. But nowhere in this story do they say why it's a conspiracy theory. They don't say it's been disproven. They don't even really, they just say like, once you start to hear it, no, that's just like, China's bringing that back up again. They just label it an old trope. It's new to me, though. So back to what Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Nao Ming said. She says that the U.S. has been politicizing origins tracing, and that only hampers science-based cooperation on the issue, disrupts united effort to combat the pandemic, and undermine global health governance mechanisms. We hope that the WHO will take a science-based, objective, and just position, not let politicization get in the way, and carry out the origins tracing study in the U.S., among other countries, and play a positive role in science-based global origins tracing. So she's saying, hey, do this in the U.S. too, guys. We've already done it. And then the U.S. asks us to do it again and again. But why are they not testing? She says, we once again urge the U.S. to immediately stop political manipulation on this issue, respond to the world's legitimate concerns soon, voluntarily share the data of suspected early cases in the U.S. with the WHO, disclose information about its biolabs at Fort Detrick and around the world, and give people of the world the truth they deserve. In fact, China has been calling for this for years now. Here is the vice foreign minister in August 2021 demanding that the U.S. investigate the origins of COVID inside its own borders, starting with Fort Detrick. He says here that 25 million Chinese people have signed a joint letter demanding an investigation of Fort Detrick, fully reflecting the people's reasonable concern and justified requirement. So could it be, I'm sorry if this question sounds ignorant, but the same amount of people in the West that are saying Wuhan, oh my God, it's there, that the same thing is happening in reverse in China and people there already know this? Fort Detrick, duh.
Well, we're not going to get the media coverage out of it, of course, but others, as others have pointed out, and I think it's in Canada, Dr. David Martin, thank you, Oscal 50 for that. Dr. David Martin revealing that and also following the timeline there. As we mentioned, Nathan as well, covering this story. So there's awareness about it, but whether or not U.S. officials are going to actually talk about it, unless you get people in the White House press corps to raise their hand and ask questions specifically of like Jean-Pierre at the White House press briefings, or have the mainstream media actually cover it. But right now it's being pushed that it's China, right? It's all focused on China. It's China balloons. It's China COVID virus. We have to hate China. That's what they want. That's the story. So don't expect to see any front page stories anymore about Fort Detrick from the New York Times.
Well, if the conversation sort of rises to a bubble, then the conversation around it will be that it's Chinese misinformation.
Right.
Right. Which they've already started.
I even saw somebody here in the chat earlier as we started this story saying, yes, this is China state media. This is China state media commentary like about this.
These are Chinese officials who said these things. Go ahead, David.
Well, I just this is Philip. that's okay. So I think that what bothers me about this, like really, really bothers me about this, is the fact that they've done such a good job of like just every moment they can covering their own ass and just withholding any information that could come to the people, that now like you literally can't trust when they say something did happen and when they say something didn't happen. And so it's just like at this point, like everything becomes a conspiracy theory because they will admit to nothing ever. They will never like reveal themselves. They're just going to cover their ass no matter what. And so this could be completely true, that it was like a coincidence or an average breach of a virus lab, and they shut it down for decontamination. That could be, but they won't say anything.
Yeah.
And so because and when they do, they're lying.
Right.
So what other conclusions can we draw?
So then why was this closed at the origin of a pandemic that we need answers for, and no origin tracing was ever done at the labs that we now know were studying coronaviruses before we had confirmed cases?
Yeah, because we kept hearing from Dr. Fauci, we kept hearing from the NIH, well, China's stonewalling us. They won't let us do our investigations. They won't let us get access to do what we need to do there. Yeah, how about you go to Fort Detrick? Why don't you do the same things there? You have access here.
Yeah.
Why don't you do that?
The only reasonable answer to that is I don't want to know the answer.
Right.
Right? That's the only way that politicians, or we're just not going to cooperate, we're not going to look on that, you know, or just no answer, which is what we got, which is it's...
Or a cover-up, right? Which is that we know that the Pentagon runs the vaccine program, right? We know that they have... So why would... If they modeling a vaccine after what they've been modeling at these four, in military bases, is it any wonder?
Yeah.
Of course it's not. I mean, it's all part of the same plan.
So that's the theory. This is what China is saying. This is what we are asking. China said it. We're asking real questions about it because the timing is all a little too suspicious. And we think that our own government should be very interested in it on our behalf, and our citizens should too. So what do you think of this? Is it suspicions or a bridge too far? Let us know in the comments below.
Here's a super chat on Rumble, or whatever you want to call it, is a Rumble rant. Peter Liano says, I'm sure that that early in the pandemic, when Trump upped the finger pointing and rhetoric that China was responsible, she retorted with an accusation that U.S. military brought the virus to Wuhan, China. And of course, there were early reports that there were people leaving Washington, you know, leaving Washington Airport with like special pouches and government, you know, things traveling to China. There were those reports in the early days. Never any confirmation that I could find from it. But anyway. So, and then someone else in the chat, Subzi, says, have you ever not wondered, Clayton, why the big push for the Bakhmut labs in Ukraine?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and the 36 bio labs in Ukraine, right? That was
That's why she continues to say in the U.S. and elsewhere. So all U.S.-controlled labs, especially the ones connected to the NIH, should be tested too. And so if we continue to just scream, China's not participating, and China's like, literally, here's my report card, then we can just keep deflecting and never have to actually test labs that we controlled.
Yeah. And yeah, they've been calling for this since 2020, as someone pointed out, but this is renewed this week in the wake of the United States calling for it from them. So that's where this is coming from. The rhetoric is intensifying, of course, over Taiwan and the big push to confront China head on, which is what the United States and the Western leaders actually want, which is absolutely ridiculous and is going to get us all killed because they're crazy. We've got more news to get to on your, what is today, Wednesday?
Wednesday.
Yeah, we are going to look at the Clinton associates who are just dying mysteriously. Investigative journalist Whitney Webb is going to be joining us on that story. Plus, the largest, maybe the biggest whistleblower in world history, Brooke Jackson. We've got an update on her trial, her court, what she's dealing with her court case right now, because there's a big COVID litigation conference about to unfold. We've got Brooke Jackson's lawyer on the show to bring us an update on that case, plus what's going to happen with the COVID litigation. But first, do you guys know that identity theft is the fastest growing crime in America? There's a new victim every 14 seconds. That's why I'm excited to partner today with Aura. Now, they do everything. They're really amazing what Aura does. And I have to say, it's amazing to know that they're in your corner taking care of you when you can't be. So I did a search the other day and on some of my sister's personal information because I wanted to see if it was on the web to see as a test for this segment. And I couldn't believe what came up, actually. It's actually pretty stunning. Email addresses, phone number, information, and more. This information is accessible because here's what's happened. Data brokers profit by selling your information to robocallers, telemarketers, spammers, and anyone else that wants to learn more about you. That's why I'm excited to tell you about today's sponsor, an Aura. Aura will identify data brokers that are exposing your information and automatically submit opt-out requests on your behalf so you don't have to do it. They will do it for you. They'll even opt you out of junk mail and telemarketing lists. And you can sign up. See that QR code right on your screen right there? That's their QR code. You can sign up and get 2 weeks right now, 14 days for free. You can use my link. You can go to aura.com/redacted. Try it for 2 weeks. And you can see how many data brokers are sharing your information. Within that 2 weeks, you'll see how much stuff is actually being stolen. Also linked in my description, you can check out, we'll have the link in the description, or you can scan that QR code right there that's right here on your screen. We had an email hack not too long ago, and they tried to sell our info on the dark web. We got alerts from Aura. They send out alerts, and they caught it. They sent me an alert to make me aware of it. I was able to fix it because Aura caught it. That's how crazy good it is. So Aura's app also features a VPN, a password manager, real-time credit, and identifying theft monitoring. They have the internet parental controls. They protect your devices from malware. Aura has almost every internet safety tool that you ever need all inside one app. So let Aura do all of the hard work keeping you safe online. If you sign up right now, we'll give you a 2-week free trial with my link. And you'll be shocked at how much of your private information Aura finds exposed over those 2 weeks. So go to aura.com/redacted, aura.com/redacted to start your free trial right now. Also linked below in the description, or scan that QR code. Why do so many associates of Bill and Hillary Clinton keep winding up dead in mysterious circumstances? Another one just died over the weekend, which we'll tell you about in just a moment, and that one might be one of the most bizarre ones we've heard so far, but the list is growing long. Clinton friend Jeffrey Epstein found dead in a jail cell. Then we have medical examiner Michael Bodden saying that Epstein's death is consistent with homicide. Then, like clockwork, more Clinton friends and associates die. In 2020, billionaire film producer Steve Bing dies after falling from a building. Mysteriously, he was a huge donor to Democrats and the Clintons. Bill Clinton then tweeting right afterwards saying, "I loved Steve Bing very much. He had a big heart. He was willing to do anything he could for the people and causes he believed in." Then you have Mark Middleton. In 2022, White House Clinton aide Mark Middleton found dead at a ranch in Arkansas. Shotgun found 30 feet away from his body, an electrical cord tied around his neck. They ruled that a suicide. And just for some context here, as Whitney Webb has reported, he was one of the guys who was involved with Jeffrey Epstein and the illicit transfer of sensitive U.S. military technology to China. Middleton, you'll recall, also testified before Congress. He pleaded the fifth 28 times to Congress when it was investigated. Then he also pleaded the fifth when asked if he was a foreign agent. Silence on that question. And then a few days ago, another Clinton billionaire associate dies. That one's ruled a suicide. He was 78-year-old Thomas Lee. He was found dead in his bathroom on his side with a single gunshot wound to his head. Then that brings us to the very latest. I mean, the list is getting incredibly long. To this weird, mysterious death that happened over the weekend. Dana Hyde, another one who worked with Clinton and the Obama administration. And she was 55 years old. She was in a jet with her family and other individuals when apparently, according to reports, they hit some turbulence over New England. That caused them to have an emergency landing. But the turbulence, they said, was the reason that she died. Her family's fine. A number of FAA and airline pilots have come forward saying, "I've never seen anyone die because of turbulence." So what in the world is going on here? Well, investigative journalist Whitney Webb has been following a lot of these weird connections over the years, particularly the Mark Middleton story, and we wanted to bring her on to talk about this. Whitney, welcome back to the show.
Hey, great to be here. Thanks for having me back on.
Sure. So this list is getting long, and you and I were texting earlier today, and as we were texting, you were literally going through and looking for her profiles on a number of different business websites, LinkedIn, Apollo, Aspen Institute, where she worked. And what were you finding?
That her profiles have been deleted. At least the LinkedIn was deleted within the last 24 hours. And the Aspen Institute, where relatively recently she was co-chair of a major Aspen Institute initiative for inclusive economic growth, she's since been deleted as well. And actually essentially written out of the history of that particular initiative. The other co-chair claims to have now on the Aspen Institute website is listed as the only founder and person who launched the initiative. With if you actually go back in the Wayback Machine, it's clear that this particular individual, Dana Hyde, was the co-chair and helped launch it as well. So it's kind of bizarre to see her written out of it. Several of her other profiles on the internet have also been pretty difficult to come across. I was able to, using archive.org, find one of her old profiles on the Aspen Institute that's since been deleted and has a lot more information than the ones that are currently online. And, reports on her death have not really mentioned a lot of her roles at the government or her affiliations that are in, you know, some of these other now deleted profiles. For example, her Council on Foreign Relation membership, not mentioned anywhere except this Aspen Institute profile, as far as I can see. And some of the more specifics about who she was working with, for example, in the Clinton White House and her role in the Obama administration, can be found there. But, you know, as to the broader question of why so many people tied up with the Clintons continue dying well after the Clintons are no longer in office or in a position of visible political prominence is a bit odd, isn't it? And, I've been trying to look for connections between, these different individuals. And obviously, you know, the most connected of the ones that you mentioned in your introduction would, of course, be Jeffrey Epstein and Mark Middleton, because they were known to have been meeting together at the White House. And you have Epstein dying in 2019 and then Mark Middleton dying last year, both under very suspicious circumstances that were ruled a suicide. But then you look at, you know, those cases and then these other cases that you mentioned, Steve Bing falling out of a 27th off the 27th floor of a high rise building. Police wouldn't even say it was a suicide. They just were like, he fell out of a building at the time. And it was subsequently, I think, reported as a suicide by the New York Post, but that didn't come from police. And, you know, just Thomas H. Lee, this financier guy, you know, not exactly clear why he might have killed himself, because just a few days before he was found dead, people thought he was in a great mood, doing really well, and they were just blown away why he would kill himself in the way that he did. And, you know, just a lot of unanswered questions. So if you want to view some of these deaths through the lens of, you know, why someone like Jeffrey Epstein was, you know, liquidated, essentially, you know, my opinion is that is the reason Jeffrey Epstein was arrested and subsequently killed is related to a factional battle within sort of these covert worlds where intelligence and organized crime, you know, swim around each other and have symbiotic relationships. And sometimes, you know, there's competing factions in that. And if you look at the history of the Clinton, you know, political dynasty, whether it's, you know, Clinton's time as governor of Arkansas or his time in the White House, in a very significant amount of connections to very suspect intelligence and criminal activities, you know, with the Arkansas-Iran-Contra connections in the 1980s, and a lot of course, the better known and also lesser known scandals of the Clinton White House era, that a lot of those, of course, involved individuals and structures that existed, you know, from his time as governor of Arkansas, and, you know, the longstanding history of political cronyism as practiced by the Clintons. So if there is some sort of factional dispute, it seems like there's certain people that may be on the chopping block, but it's getting a bit hard to sort of write all of these off as a coincidence. Are they all necessarily connected? You know, it's hard to say it at this point beyond, you know, potentially the Epstein-Middleton case, but you're having a lot of interesting people stack up here. Yeah, and it's definitely time to at least question what's going on.
Well, yeah, and you mentioned the intelligence side of this, and one thing that you brought up when we were texting earlier, you mentioned the Jerusalem Venture Partners, which is, can you tell us a little bit about that and what Dana Hyde's connection was to that group?
So in some of the reporting about who Dana Hyde is, I found one mention that her current position at the time of her death, she was involved or working for. She was listed as a partner and of Jerusalem Venture Partners. And in other press releases of that particular venture capital firm, she's referred to as an advisor. You can't find anything about her on their website right now. Which is, again, quite odd. But Jerusalem Venture Partners is something I actually covered back in 2020 because a New York City-funded, taxpayer-funded cybersecurity center was basically being run by Jerusalem Venture Partners. And again, I reported on this in 2020, so I can't speak to what's happened with that particular venture since then. But at the time, the chief operating officer for Jerusalem Venture Partners was previously a person who managed major amounts of money for the Bronfman family, who come up in my book a lot, and also in connection with the Epstein case and have significant ties to organized crime. And a lot of this, a lot of these networks that I've traced in my work for a few years, you know, and in addition to that, the person that created Jerusalem Venture Partners has a lot of rather disconcerting intelligence and military intelligence connections. This particular venture capital firm was born out of this somewhat controversial Israeli government program called the Yasma program that also spanned a lot of other venture capital networks that ended up being tied up with the Maxwell family, for example. And other groups of that nature, and have been tied up with espionage, you know, on several occasions over the past, you know, few decades or so. And when you look at that in the context of, you know, Maxwell's and Epstein and the use of blackmail, and also, you know, aggressive espionage beyond that, you know, it starts to look a little bit weird, but it's not exactly clear what Dana Hyde was working on for them, because as I mentioned, she's not really, you can only find her name on scattered throughout a handful of these Jerusalem Venture Partner press releases, but that's, you know, supposed to be her affiliation at the time of her death right now. Mm-hmm.
It's all very, very odd. All very, very odd. And we thank you so much, Whitney, for continuing to look into this. It's crazy. And just when I saw this story, I thought there's so many weird connections here that we need to try to get to the bottom of. Investigative journalist Whitney Webb, always great to see you. Thank you so much for jumping on and talking about this really interesting story.
Thanks. Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks, Whitney. And, you know, it's amazing because Robert Rubin, in some of her, in some of Whitney's reporting as well, we didn't really have time to get into it there, but I'll just a little bit here. I'll just touch on the Aspen Institute. Of course, we covered on the show a couple of months ago. The Aspen Institute was where they did that Hunter Biden exercise, where remember they did that 11-day scenario that began with the release of falsified records about Hunter Biden's employment. Remember they like tested it like, well, if this happens, if they say that Hunter Biden had this issue, this is how we would respond. So it was all of like this deep state coming together and like the staged exercise about what happens if something happens with Hunter Biden. Mm. That was all from the Aspen Institute, yeah, of course, where she's associated with, you know, working for the Aspen Institute. Suddenly they scrubbed the website of her name. And we should also mention Robert Rubin, the former Treasury Secretary who signed off on Epstein's first Clinton White House visit, and whose deputy Larry Summers flew on Epstein's plane, later became very close with Epstein while president of Harvard. And then, of course, Whitney goes through a lot of this in her book, where she talks about, you know, these bizarre deaths specifically, and how a lot of this is just tied together with the Chinagate scandal involving both Middleton and Epstein. So many dirty and weird questions, though. Somebody in the chat says, my favorite of these deaths is Middleton, where he somehow shoots himself with a shotgun and he's hanging from like a tree with an electric cord around his neck. But the shotgun is found. It's 30 feet away from him.
Oh, how do you accomplish that?
Good. I don't know. You have to be really good to shoot yourself and then you have to throw the gun 30 feet.
Uh-huh.
Guess that's how that works.
Okay. All right.
So if that ever happens, just want you to know that that's not foul play. That I'm a shot putter. I can shoot myself and then shoot and throw the gun.
The Flash could pull it off because you could fire the gun, run over, tie yourself to the tree before the bullet gets there. Other than that, I don't think it's feasible.
But yeah, Barry Allen could pull that off. You're right about that.
Because he'd run in front of the bullet.
Right. He would shoot it and he'd be like, okay, though, I got time because this bullet's like, and then I can run over here and drop the gun and come back and make it look like a.
Oh, okay. All right. So maybe he was the Flash.
Barry Allen. There you go.
All right. Well, we have more news to get to. We're going to tell you about why the U.S. thinks it's a good idea to invade Mexico next. I mean, why not?
Sure. Why not? Mexico's a great place to invade, and it's closer, right, relatively speaking.
So it would be a lot easier than any Asian country that we've been working so hard to, you know, get our hands on. So we'll see. But first, we want to tell you about our friends over at Shopify. Now, if you hear that cha-ching sound coming in, that's the sound of another sale on Shopify and the moment another business dream becomes a reality. If you would like to make any online retail store, Shopify is the place for you to start. It's a commerce platform that revolutionizes millions of businesses worldwide. Now, in fact, the Redacted store does use Shopify as its back end. So when you're buying, let's say, your Redacted mug or ball cap or hoodie, we do accept payments through Shopify, and they help us by covering every sales channel from in-person systems to all-in-one e-commerce platforms. And they even let you sell across social media marketing like TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram. And it's packed with industry-leading tools ready to ignite your growth. Shopify gives you complete control over your business and your brand without having to learn any new skills such as web design or coding. And thanks to 24/7 help and an extensive business course library, Shopify is there to support your success every step of the way. So it's your turn to get serious about selling and try Shopify today. This is possibility powered by Shopify. So sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redacted. That's all lowercase, shopify.com/redacted to take your business to the next level today. Once again, that's shopify.com/redacted.
Joan Denise in our chat says, 30 feet, really? Yes, the shotgun was found 30 feet away. People can't get over this. Yes, it was 30 feet away. Like, it's suicide. Like, what idiots, like, medical examiners, like, I got an early lunch. I'm going to check this one off.
Yeah.
Oh, Clinton associate?
It's like, oh, that's easy. I used suicide. The gun. I don't need it anymore. Like, yeah. That's not how death works.
I was going to say, maybe afterwards he threw it because it pissed him off. He's like, oh, that hurt. Get away from me.
get away from me, you foul gun. All right, here's a question for you. I love good questions, and let's do a little Q&A, shall we? Here's a question for you. Should the United States invade Mexico just like we did 180 years ago, you know, to kind of celebrate, also maybe finish what we started invading Mexico? This is the question right now before the United States Senate, when, you know, the United States, of course, 180 years ago, did invade Mexico. We did it in the 1840s. So what is a few hundred years between invasions? We were just taking a coffee break. Here was the United States and Mexico borders map 180 years ago. Look at that. Looks totally different, right? That was Mexico no longer. Now the United States swooped in and took all of that area. So to the American military-industrial complex, it would be a dream come true. And a heck of a lot easier, right, than most of the countries that we invade right now. Under the guise of bringing security and stability to those countries. That's mm-hmm. how we like to couch it, right? We're helping you with our invasion. We're helping you by stealing your oil like we do in Syria. When what we really want, of course, is just to pillage your natural resources and your cheap labor, like in Haiti, for
instance.
Well,
it won't be cheap if the United States actually took it over. That labor would no longer be cheap. Well, it would be slapped with all kinds of laws and regulations.
Well, no, the thing is, the beauty is what we'll do is what we do in Haiti, right? Well, we'll take it over. We'll monopolize, we'll invade and we'll take over land and territory like we do in other areas, but we won't actually put you under our umbrella. So we'll get all the cheap labor still. Like we'll still get to keep all of that cheap labor.
Yeah. So they get all of the bad side and none of the benefits. That's what that's what we want. That's what
exactly.
We do.
So the United States has a history of destabilizing countries in Latin America. It's what we're good at. Like, if you could pick one thing that the United States is really good at besides war, well, no, we're not really good at that either, but yeah.
Dips. We're good at that.
Making good dips?
Yeah.
Yeah, like ranch dressing and stuff. Yeah.
Ranch
dressing and onion dip.
Yeah.
And nachos and that kind of stuff.
But war, I mean, we used to be good at war a couple, you know, like 60, 70 years ago. Not so much anymore. Now we invade and we do
bean dip.
Yeah, bean dip's pretty good.
I'm not going to stop this unless I'm telling you to.
So the United States has a history of destabilizing countries in Latin America. The U.S. has famously, of course, destabilized governments in Argentina, Brazil, Guyana, Bolivia, Chile, the Dominican Republic, Ecuador, El Salvador, Guatemala. Name a few in the chat if you got them. Keep them coming because there's a lot. Nicaragua, maybe most famously in most recent memory, Nicaragua and Uruguay. We're, you know, all of those, if you want to know why are all of those Nicaraguans pouring across America's southern border? Oh, it's because the United States destroyed their country. That's why. And involved themselves and destabilized that country so that it's unlivable. And then where do they come? They're coming to the United States. So it's a problem of our own making, right? And we wonder, well, why are all these Nicaraguans coming to our country? Oh, because we destroyed their country. It's convenient. So Mexico seems like the next logical choice for an invasion. No need to put any armored vehicles on a boat and ship them to places like Yemen or Ukraine or Somalia or Taiwan anymore. No. We can save gas. We can save money by just driving across our own border. And so it is. Yesterday, Ukraine's favorite U.S. senator, Ukrainian Senator Lindsey Graham, announced that he's about to introduce legislation that would call for a military invasion of Mexico. And he said this with a totally straight face. Here's the report. Lindsey Graham puts Mexico on notice with a military force warning. South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham is planning to introduce legislation in Congress that would allow the U.S. to use military force against Mexico in order to track down on drug cartels.
Now, this comes on news that two Americans were found alive after being kidnapped and mistaken for drug dealers by the cartel. Two other Americans were not so lucky and were found dead.
Were killed.
And
yeah,
so,
murdered.
Yes. And so now Lindsey Graham is saying, hey, you can't take care of this cartel stuff, then we're going to have to, you know, use military force to go in. And how would...
Have you seen America lately? I don't understand. Like, you literally go to any major American city right now, and there's murder after murder after murder. So we're going to invade Mexico because Americans were in Mexico and got mixed up in cartel. Like, think about the ridiculousness of that statement. The United States is going to invade with military force in order to secure your country.
And so the United States, I mean, they're going to fight the cartel?
Right.
Inside of Mexico?
No, what we're going to do is, if we send military there, it would be in order to take over the country and to pillage their resources and to destabilize that whole area so that we could then, I don't know, annex Mexico. Who the hell knows what we would do? But that's the plan. So here's Lindsey Graham explaining, at least tangentially, he doesn't go into details on the legislation that he's about to bring out, but here's what he told Jesse Waters. Watch.
I'm going to introduce legislation, Jesse, to make certain Mexican drug cartels, foreign terrorist organizations under U.S. law, and set the stage to use military force if necessary to protect America from being poisoned by things coming out of Mexico. So what would Lindsey Graham do? I would tell Mexican government, if you don't clean up your act, we're going to clean it up for you.
Stephen Kay in our chat says, okay, you go first, Lindsey. You go with the military, you go into Mexico first.
Yeah.
I want to make sure I'm understanding this just for the future. I'm just going to save this. But so something is happening on the U.S. border, south of, like in a country on our border that we don't like. And so our plan is to send the military in, and we're okay with that.
Right.
I just want to make sure I'm, yeah, okay, I'm following along.
Yeah, you're following. You go.
Oh, I see the
there's
parallel.
There's nowhere else in the world that a very similar thing has happened.
Yeah.
So
I'm just, that a country is invaded across.
I'm not naming names.
That there's problems coming up against your border where people are getting killed, and you have a problem with that, so then you invade. Yeah. Well, the difference here is, of course, those are Mexicans that live south of the border, and Americans who are traveling there is not enough for the United States military to intervene. I mean, no more wars, please. The United States does not need another war, and we certainly don't need to invade Mexico. Here's what you could do, though, is stop destabilizing Latin America through your own interests, just like you've done through the last 100 years in every major country I can think of. You know, let's talk about Egypt for a minute. Like, you don't like that Nasser is taking care of the Egyptian people and actually is pro-peace and is open to all sorts of peace talks and becoming a strong Egypt. That's a threat to you. So what do you want to do? You destabilize. In fact, Britain, France, also, well, you want to assassinate these people? That's all you want to do. Assassinate Nasser, assassinate Muammar Gaddafi. So just please do not invade Mexico. We're just asking, please do not invade Mexico.
We vote no on that. I mean, that's not to say that the cartel is not a problem precipitated by the opioid epidemic.
Yeah, and precipitated by the United States destabilizing these countries, right? So
well, where you among have, other things.
Where you have, yeah, and you have a lack of, and funneling, yeah, all sorts of problems, but you destabilize governments, and then who swoops in and fills the vacuum?
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And
yeah. I mean, if military was the answer, Mexico would have done that. They also have a military.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, you they know, do have
maybe they already thought of that.
I don't know. I just find this, you know, Lindsey Graham more blathering here. This is the same guy that, you know, loves Ukraine and wants to continue the war in Ukraine and wants to go right at Russia and decapitate and take out Vladimir Putin on the same time. So he wants to invade Russia and also invade Mexico.
David, who's not here today, points out that Trump proposed fighting the cartels in his latest speech, too. So maybe this seems like a Republican talking point.
Yeah.
And maybe it will go nowhere. I don't know.
Well, both parties are corrupt, and Republicans and Democrats are both warmongers who want nothing more than to expand the military-industrial complex. So it doesn't matter who's president of the United States. They both want to continue to expand the military. All right, we've got more news to get to, though. The next story we're going to cover is related specifically about Pfizer and the whistleblowers, of course, associated with that. Robert Barnes is going to be joining us. He's the lawyer for Brooke Jackson. Now, you remember, Brooke is probably one of the most famous, one of the largest whistleblowers in world history, and who blew the whistle on Pfizer, was working there, and saw that there were what they were doing was awful. And so told the FDA about it and promptly lost her job. And so her court case is proceeding, and we're going to learn more about that. Plus, there's also a big COVID summit happening on March 25th and 26th. Dr. Peter McCullough is going to be there. Robert Malone's going to be there. And their goal is to try to find a way to pierce these contracts that the government signed with Big Pharma so that people could bring litigation against Big Pharma. So we're going to talk to Robert Barnes in just a moment. But we're going to do that over on Rumble because, you know...
Well, one of the punishments we've received on YouTube before was covering Pfizer's own documentation of their own adverse effects. So we don't take chances anymore because we do want to keep our YouTube channel. So we're going to go and do that in a place where there's free speech allowed. And they seem less willing to appease Pfizer on that platform.
Yes. So rumble.com/redacted is where we're going to go. Please move the stream over there. We're going to continue the live stream there. So all 28,000 of you on YouTube, please come on over to Rumble, rumble.com/redacted. Open a free account. People are like, oh, you have to put your credit card info to use Rumble. You do not. Only if you want to pay for like a chat or a Rumble rant or something like that. You don't have to. They just do that to verify, I guess. So you don't have to pay anything. It's free. It's free, 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 just like YouTube. Someone says, Brendan says, Marianne Williamson is a president who would not expand the military-industrial complex. That's right.
Oh, yeah.
Perhaps.
She is running.
Yeah, exactly. She just announced, what, 2 weeks ago, last week or whatever. Yeah. All right, so come on over to Rumble. Rumble.com/redacted. Rumble.com/redacted is the place to come. All right, while we wait for everyone to come over, let us let you in on a little secret. We have a store. We have a store here on Rumble, and you can just go there very easily. There it is. It's the Redacted Store, redactedstore.com. Go to redactedstore.com, get your Redacted merch, and you can support independent journalism in the process. Again, redactedstore.com is the place to go. We've got hats, mugs, hoodies and more. And I heard from a couple of you who just received your shirts. I said, someone just wrote to us and said they got their hoodie and it's super comfortable. So thank you for that. I know, Philip, you said your daughter, you got your Redacted hoodie and your daughter stole it. She said it was super comfortable.
Yes. Yes. I got to try it on. And then she put it on when we were on our way out the door. And now it is not mine anymore. So I got to wear it. It was very comfortable. It's very lightweight and soft. And
oh, no.
Yep. She took it. It's not mine anymore.
We should give you one for Father's Day.
Yes, that's what we should do. So redactedstore.com is the place to go. Redactedstore.com. Our next guest is Robert Barnes. He's leading the charge against Big Pharma's lies, and he's been at the forefront of COVID litigation. He's also the lawyer representing Brooke Jackson. Now, you'll remember Brooke Jackson was the Pfizer whistleblower who told the world that Pfizer had falsified data, unblinded patients, and failed to respond in a timely fashion to adverse events that were popping up after these jabs, after people took the jabs. And now Robert is heading up a big COVID summit on March 25th and 26th, and the deep state is not happy about it. They're trying to stop it. They're trying to smear it. And we wanted to welcome Robert on the show. Robert, welcome to Redacted.
Glad to be here.
So why are the CDC, why is Big Pharma, why are these other groups so scared of your conference, of your big summit on March 25th?
So it's a Vaccine Safety Research Foundation is sponsoring, along with Warner Mendenhall, a conference that I, Mary Holland of the Children's Health Defense, Dr. Malone, Dr. Corey, Dr. McCullough, a bunch of people are going to be there. And the in Atlanta, Georgia, people can still come if they want to. What the there's still available tickets. The reason why there's been a tax on it is because the point and purpose of the conference is to find a way to get legal remedy for the people that have been injured by the vaccine. And the concern by those in positions of power is that they believe that they have abolished any mechanism or means of meaningful remedy for injury from the vaccine because of the immunity by the PrEP Act, immunity under the Childhood Immunizations Law, all of these aggregate immunities under the contract that Pfizer signed with the Department of Defense, which said, by the way, if you, the government, give this to anybody, we can never be sued for it. You know, they assume that those immunities are impregnable. And we're going to try to find ways to break through those immunities to see whether you can sue based on the employer mandating it, whether you can sue under various state tort law theories that may be outside of the governance of these immunity laws, challenge the laws themselves as unconstitutional. A woman in Washington, D.C. just filed suit because her two kids were given the vaccine at a Ronald McDonald's mobile clinic without her knowing about it. And the kids were tricked into getting it by lies and deceits by a prominent Georgetown healthcare official, a doctor who is running those clinics. So that's why we'll get continued blowback and continued efforts to not have, you know, the press won't cover it, just like they won't cover the Brooke Jackson case. They don't want people to know there might be remedies and relief out there for the injuries they suffered from the vaccine.
Even Rolling Stone. I mean, the mainstream media will cover it, but they'll do it in a negative way, of course, right? So Rolling Stone, I just saw this morning, has a hit piece out, a smear piece on it, calling it the anti-vax movement. And that's not what this is, right?
Not at all. I mean, take, for example, that's what Pfizer called Brooke Jackson. Brooke Jackson has spent 20 years helping to develop safe drugs. Brooke Jackson took the Moderna vaccine because she thought it was safe, unlike the Pfizer one. Didn't know there were issues with the Moderna one until later. So they kept calling her a leader of an anti-vax movement. And if the anti-vax is defined as being just reflexively hostile to vaccines, pretty much nobody's really anti-vax. That's a very tiny percentage of the population. They label Robert Kennedy Jr. anti-vax when Robert Kennedy Jr. has taken most of the vaccines. His kids have taken most of the vaccines. The it's only dangerous drugs disguised as vaccines that lead to the questions and problems and criticisms. And I think what it reflects is they've mostly got around, they took a drug, they put a fancy label on it, and it's almost as if it has holy quality suddenly. You put the word vaccine on it, and all of a sudden it's magical and miraculous. And it's all of a sudden not Pfizer, one of the biggest criminal drug dealers in the history of the world. Somebody that makes El Chapo look like a corner street drug dealer by comparison. This is one of the most criminally fine drug dealers in the history of the world. And yet somehow we're supposed to think this came from from God, because it has the label vaccine on it. So it's just a continued smear efforts to hide and disguise how dangerous a lot of these drugs are.
And a lot of this has been wrapped under emergency use authorization, right? The Biden administration has continued to push for emergency powers, giving him this authority. The vaccines never have gotten approval, and they're still sitting under emergency use authorization. What sort of legal immunity does this give these drug manufacturers when it's sitting under this emergency use authorization protocol?
Well, it's extraordinary. We're almost 2 years out from when the FDA issued a biologic license to Pfizer for the COVID-19 vaccine. And yet it's continued still, as you note, under the emergency use authorization is how it's being given. Right. When you're not supposed to give an emergency use authorization if there's a biologic licensed drug available. So how do they get around it? They pretend it's unavailable. It's just magically been unavailable for years. And in fact, Bobby Kennedy and I said at the time, it's going to be unavailable until they add it to the kids list. Why? Because if it's on the emergency use authorization list or it's on the kids immunization list, they can't be sued for all the injuries it caused. That's what the whole scheme and game is about. It's all about preventing. I mean, I said for people from the get-go why I was not taking the vaccine. So it's very simple. Why would I trust a drug, not only from one of the biggest criminal drug dealers in the history of the world, but even if you put that aside, why would I trust a drug that they have every incentive, you could even argue a corporate obligation, to maximize its sales and no deterrent whatsoever, no skin in the game whatsoever, because there's no liability, no accountability. Now, we're going to try to find ways to have liability, accountability anyway, but it can't go to the drug companies right now under the law. So the emergency use authorization has always been about the war on ivermectin. Was really about making sure there could be emergency use authorization.
Protections. You mentioned a few tangentially, but maybe you could dive a little bit more specifically into it. As we uncovered and showed documents on our show over the many months, of course, by having this immunity, it really seems like it absolves them of anything. These contracts, like if you and I were to go into business together and one of us was to write a contract this one-sided, you would tear it up. You would say, Clayton, I'm not going to go into business with you. It's all in favor of you. There's nothing here, you know, and that's exactly what these contracts are. So are you confident of any of these little piercings that you're going to be able to find here?
I think the key is ultimately going to be, will there be a court open to these challenges? And if not, at least use the litigation to lobby the legislators to change the legislation. Because that's the goal. We've got to take some egregious cases, show that either the courts say, you know what, actually the PrEP Act is unconstitutional. You have in America under the Seventh Amendment to the United States Constitution a right to trial by jury. And they are stripping you of your right to trial by jury when Congress gives these special deals or when the Defense Department gives special immunity to these big drug companies. So the goal will be to say that's unconstitutional, also arguably on the 10th Amendment grounds, because under state law, you have a right under each state in the United States, also a right to trial by jury, also a right to remedy by the tort system. And that is also being denied. And arguably that was not within federal congressional power in the first place to do. So we're going to challenge it. But if the courts end up being deaf, then the remedy is to use the court's deafness to create legislative change. We never should have done the childhood immunizations law, liability immunity law, and we never should have done the PrEP Act immunity, liability immunity law. It's never a good idea to tell any powerful company you have all the incentive in the world to do something that could be very costly, but at the same time, you have no incentive at all to make sure you don't injure people. And that's a bad system. We need to fix it for good.
Now the real conundrum will be for you guys, if the courts don't want to hear it, finding legislators that haven't been paid by Big Pharma and their pockets lined. That's like trying to find a needle in a haystack right now. I would imagine trying to find members of Congress that don't have their pockets lined by Big Pharma, right?
No doubt. And I think that's where the court of public opinion matters tremendously. The courts of law listen to the courts of public opinion, even if they pretend they don't. And the courts of legislation and Congress and state legislatures, they also listen to the court of public opinion. So if enough people make enough noise about this, that's the only thing that's going to force them to change the law on this, because the law needs to change on this.
Before I get you out of here, I do want to get an update on Brooke Jackson's case, the latest developments there. What can you share about that? Just curious. And for our audience that might not even be familiar with her case, can you give us a little context here? I did at the beginning, but it's better coming from you.
So Brooke Jackson is probably one of the biggest whistleblowers in the history of the world in terms of government corruption and fraud, in terms of corporate corruption and fraud. So she's been, for the better part of 20 years, someone who goes in and monitors clinical trials and helps make sure to create safe drugs. And she was part of Pfizer's clinical 3-stage trial testing of the Pfizer COVID vaccine. And that was being run by a group called Ventavia that was subcontracted out in Texas. She was at multiple locations. In just the few weeks she was there, she witnessed egregious violations of basic safety protocols, of the scientific metrics by which you measure the safety and efficacy and immunization capacity of a drug. This included not only things like walking in and seeing needles sticking out of bags, seeing people's private medical information plastered onto walls, people rolling in the various corridors outside of where they're supposed to be, where they're suffering an adverse event and nobody's monitoring them, not having the vaccine at the right temperature, people knowing who is getting the placebo and who isn't, totally not randomized at all because people are having their friends and other people come in and give them money to be part of the test. I mean, basically all the metrics we would have for measuring safety and efficacy were all eviscerated. She sees this, she's shocked, she reports it all the way up the food chain, and what she finds out, what she hears back is this is systemic, this is systematic, that we cannot get this project done under this time frame with honest data. So we just got to falsify the data. We just got to fabricate the data. We just got to pretend we gathered information we never did. They weren't even taking baseline measurements to even measure what the effect of the vaccine was on people. So it was every egregious thing that could happen. The most serious one, of course, was serious adverse events, and other adverse events were not even being reported to even be recorded to be sent to the government. And so she ultimately calls the FDA, tells them what's happening. The same day she calls the FDA, later in the day, two things happen. First, she's summarily fired from her job. Just said, you're fired, you're gone, don't come back. Second, the Pfizer lawyer gets on the phone with her from New York. And he's like, how does the Pfizer lawyer even know anything about me or know my cell phone number?
Wow.
And that was the beginning of it. She ultimately files what's called a KeyTAM Act, False Claims Act claim in the United States. The False Claim Act laws come from the Civil War when a bunch of corrupt corporate vendors, scammed American soldiers. And so Congress came in again because of the court of public opinion. Congress said, we're not going to trust the Justice Department to do its job. We're going to instead allow every ordinary American who witnesses this kind of corruption and fraud to bring a False Claims Act under the law. And so she brought that claim. The Biden Department of Justice sat on it for about a year, said, hey, we have to keep it sealed and all the rest. But they said they were investigating. We don't know if they ever did investigate. She starts figuring out something's wrong, something's AWOL, because by keeping it sealed, they're keeping her story secret from the world and the existence of the suit secret from the world. The British Medical Journal comes in, does an independent investigation, independently vets and ultimately independently vouches for all the medical details and all the factual details of her story. That story goes throughout Europe. The United States media tries to suppress the British Medical Journal story. She hires me to unseal the complaint, to file an amended complaint and move forward. Pfizer comes in and moves to dismiss. All the other defendants that are affiliated with Pfizer moved to dismiss. The court held an almost unprecedented, at least as far as I know, four-hour oral argument on the motion to dismiss in federal court March 1st in Beaumont, Texas. Courtroom was packed because of ordinary people showing up wanting to know what's happening. And our argument was simple, that if you read the contract, Pfizer was obligated to deliver a safe, effective vaccine for the prevention of COVID-19 at speed and scale. What they delivered was a dangerous drug that's ineffective, that is not a traditional vaccine, and that doesn't prevent COVID-19. And not only that, part of the ways of enforcing that was that Pfizer was obligated under the contract to comply with all the rules and regulations of the FDA for clinical trials, and they were obligated to provide honest and accurate data to the Defense Department as well as the FDA concerning everything related to the drug, and they were obligated to provide any red flags, any concerns, any issues. They did none of the three. They filed falsified invoices, fraudulent invoices, doctored documentation, doctored information, doctored data, and didn't tell them about Brooke Jackson's warning, amongst others. So our argument is they defrauded the American people by lying about the safety, efficacy, and nature of this drug, and that what the consequence has been far beyond the billions and billions of dollars they've stolen from the American people. It's the tens of thousands and millions of Americans that are now disabled or dead because of this drug. So our concluding line was, Pfizer lied, people died, time for this case to move forward.
Well, I hope it does, and I hope we get some serious answers on this. It's a shining light in this mess right now. Hopefully, guys will prevail. You have our blessing from our side on this. Before we get you out of here, just let us know, how can people find tickets if they want to come to the location of the event, the big COVID summit on the 25th and the 26th of March?
So yeah, just it's Steve Kirsch's organization that's putting together all the tickets and the rest, and that's the Vaccine Safety Research Foundation, VSRF, and they can look that up and they can find tickets and guides to being able to go to the conference.
All right. My guest has been Robert Barnes. Thank you so much for joining us. We really, really appreciate it here on Redacted.
Glad to be here.
And thanks to all of you for being a part of our show. I should mention we have a daily newsletter. I would love for all of you to subscribe to it. Just go to redacted.inc. It's not .com, it's .inc. And just put in your email address, and you'll have to verify that email address. And once you do that, you'll receive the newsletter every morning, Monday through Friday. And we try to cover about 5 or 6 interesting stories to kind of kickstart your day. We try to bring you a ton of value. We also hope to make you smile or laugh a little bit with some jokes. And then you're informed and you can read it in about 5 or 10 minutes over your cup of coffee and then be out the door. And it's also a great way for us to stay in contact with you because it's outside of big tech and it's our own newsletter. We own it. So we're able to communicate with you in case anything ever happens to us. We're able to stay in contact with you. So again, go to redacted.inc and sign up for our daily newsletter. So we are live Monday through Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern time right here on Rumble and YouTube starting at 4 p.m. Eastern time. So please set that reminder and we will see you back here tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern time. Have a great day, everyone.